Okay, we'll call our first case today, which is case number 61940, Southern Highlands Community Association versus District Court. And we also have the Crown Deferred Trust et al., the real parties in interest. Okay, and Ms. Peterson, you're going to argue on behalf of the appellant. Huh? And do you wish to reserve any time on this? Okay.
Thank you, Chief Justice Gibbons, and may it please the Court, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you for hearing this case today. There are a number of cases that are pending before the District Court. Your decision today will guide some of those on these issues and related issues. I represent the Southern Highlands Community Association, a group of homeowners who are living in Southern Highlands, who have frankly shouldered the burden of the economy in the last few years and have carried the burden of other their neighbors' foreclosures. And they have sought to enforce their rights under conditions, covenants, and restrictions applicable to the property within Southern Highlands. We're here today to seek to correct a jurisdictional error that was made in the District Court when the District Court denied a motion to dismiss and granted class certification for a class of entities and individuals who had not gone through the mandatory alternative dispute resolution process of NRED, Nevada Real Estate Division, under NRS 38310. And I should clarify, this is not an action that's regarding title to property. There's no claim for quiet title in this case. Instead, Prem Deferred, one of the real parties in interest, and an investor bought property at a foreclosure sale and paid a portion of the lien that was asserted by the HOA. In the proceedings below, Prem Deferred actually went through the arbitration process before NRED, complied with the mandates of 38310, and ultimately the arbitrator issued a decision in favor of Prem Deferred on a part of its claim. Prem Deferred then filed a civil action in District Court and attempted to file it on behalf of a class. There was motion practice in the District Court. Some additional parties became named parties in the District Court action, and those four other real parties in interest, Elsinore, King Futz, the entity Montessa, and the entity Higher Ground, had all actually started an arbitration before NRED, but dropped their claims against the association and proceeded in District Court with the class action. Ultimately, the District Court denied a motion to dismiss and certified a class. And when it did so, it certified a class of owners and former owners who had not gone through the mandatory alternative dispute resolution process. And when the District Court did that, the District Court violated the clear and unambiguous language of 38310, violated what the legislature was trying to do with its public policy favoring arbitration, and frankly violated what this court has said in its pronouncements about 38310. The language of NRS 38310 is clear and unambiguous, and it says that no civil action based upon a claim relating to, and again that's broad language, the interpretation, application, or enforcement, it's in the disjunctive, of any covenants, conditions, or restrictions may be commenced unless that action has been submitted to mediation or arbitration pursuant to that chapter. And it tells the court to dismiss any civil action that is commenced in violation of the provisions of that statute. So when the District Court certified this class on behalf of these individuals and entities who had not, these members who had not gone through that arbitration process, the District Court violated the clear and unambiguous language of the statute. And this court has actually weighed in on 38310 and has explained that statute prohibits civil actions relating to the enforcement of CC&Rs without first submitting the claim to mediation or arbitration. That was in the Ham versus Arrow Creek matter. Now, since we briefed this petition, this court again came with another case, a decision in the McKnight family versus Adept Management Services case, and that was late October of last year, again looking at 38310. In that case, this court reiterated that in the case where 48310 may apply, a district court is supposed to analyze each claim and see if it does relate to the interpretation, enforcement, or application of CC&Rs. It is the very right of the Homeowners Association to demand assessments and the extent of those assessments that is laid out in Article 9 of the CC&Rs that are involved in this case. And it is the very right of the HOA to demand these that Prim Deferred is seeking to challenge and to recover. In the underlying action in the arbitration, Prim Deferred actually had paid a portion of this lien that had been demanded, they say, by the HOA. They are seeking to recover that amount. And so that, in essence, the recovery of that implicates the very CC&Rs and the very power of the HOA. Now, Prim Deferred makes two arguments. To say that they do not have to comply with 38310 for purposes of the class. And they say, first, that because the class representative had gone through the NREG process, that no one else has to. And then second, they make a statutory argument. They say that actually their claims don't say anything about CC&Rs. They're making a claim under subsection 2 of NRS 3116. Both of these assertions are wrong, and I'd like to go through them both.
So I want to be careful with something that I may have misunderstood. It is the denial of the motion to dismiss that is before us, not the class certification. Is that correct?
It is the denial of motion to dismiss the class claims, and it was upon the certification of the class, the district court compounded its error of the denial of motion to dismiss the class claims. That's correct.
So you're not actually appealing the certification.
Well, our petition actually addresses both of those within it, but it was the denial of the motion to dismiss the class claims that initially caused us to seek the stay, and that when we sought the stay first in the district court, then was when the class was also certified.
And that is the underlying violation of Chapter 38310, as far as you're concerned.
They both are, Your Honor. The denial of the motion to dismiss where claims were being asserted on behalf of a class, and then ultimately when the district court compounded the error and certified a class of members who had not gone through that.
Ms. Pearson, to follow up on Justice Sayers' question, why trying to determine what this case isn't about, I'm talking about this particular one by Southern Highlands, we had that lingering issue here, the priority of the Homeowners Association lien to first mortgage holders, second mortgage holders, purchasers at sale. Do you need a parking to a private sale versus judicial foreclosure? I mean, I'm looking at all these. We got, 50 cases up here or something on these various issues. So today, we're not going to delve into all those as far as you're concerned. We're going to deal with this issue on the arbitration and the procedures. Well, what type of relief do you want us to consider here with this writ?
One of the Prim Deferred claims is that what they are seeking with regards to the super priority lien and the claims that surround it. They're saying that you do not have to go to the covenants, conditions, and restrictions to adjudicate that claim, and that is false. So to the extent that this court needs to look at the language of the super priority lien that's identified in subsection 2, 3116, subsection 2, this court needs to do that. But this court today does not need to decide whether, for instance, charges include collection costs or anything like that, because the statute directs everything back to the declaration, and because the statute directs everything back to the declaration, this should have proceeded first in NRED.
Okay.
So with regards then to the first argument that Prim Deferred had made, that because the class representative had gone through the NRED arbitration that no one else has to, I need to explain a couple things. It's absolutely true that in the arbitration before NRED, only Prim Deferred participated. In other words, there was no opportunity for a class member to opt in or opt out. There was no notice to any class. And ultimately then, only a decision was entered as to Prim Deferred, not something that could bind the class. Now they could have proceeded in NRED as a mass arbitration and joined a number of parties. And
they indicated that would be futile in the sense that the arbitrator wouldn't certify a class and said they had no jurisdiction to do so. Can you address that issue?
Sure. So what I'm speaking to is the concept of joinder in general. That is true. The Enroll arbitrator did not have jurisdiction to certify a class, but there is nothing prohibiting the Enroll arbitrator from proceeding in a mass arbitration. In fact, that case that had been initiated by four of the real parties in interest, the Elsinore, Montesa, that they dropped, that case actually went on with regards to 100 parties. So there's nothing prohibiting anyone from hearing that kind of a case. It's the effect of binding a class that INRED did not have the ability to do. And so that's why in district court, the class representative cannot bind the class, and it should not proceed under 38310. And it's an argument that we're making, Your Honor, that it's a jurisdictional statute. In other words, no member of the class, if any of those members of the class had actually brought a separate action individually against my client, the Southern Highlands Community Association, the court would have been mandated to dismiss it. So how can a member of a class who couldn't bring their own action be part of a class action with a class representative? They cannot. The statute 38310 is jurisdictional and it is mandatory on the court. Now, the other argument that they propound is they say that they're really only making a claim on subsection 2 of this statute, 116.3916. And that statute talks about the super priority lien, but it uses the word assessment. And it says that the lien is prior to all security interests to the extent of the assessments. And there's limited language to that phrase, but the assessments term is what I'm keying in on. Because that assessments term is defined in the very same statute. And that very same statute says that assessments defines it as unless the declaration otherwise provides any penalties, fees, charges, late charges, fines, and interest are all enforceable as assessments. And so that key language, unless the declaration otherwise provides, means that the claims that they have brought, that they have tried to bring under subsection 2 of this statute, directly invoke the interpretation and enforcement and application of the very declaration that governs the HOA's right to seek its assessment.
Has Prim met the requirements under the statute to bring the claim itself on behalf of itself?
It for itself, it has. It has met those, and we are not disputing that. They did seek to revive in their own petition to revive some of the claims that the district court had dismissed, where she had called them CCNR-based claims. They agree that those claims did relate to the CCNRs. They should not be revived with your action today.
And then the arbitrator's determination of the Prim question under subsection 2, was that focused on the priority, or did it involve the assessment language that you reference in the statute?
The arbitrator's decision actually made an award in terms of a 6-month versus 9-month award. It didn't address anything else that Prim had brought forth. If there's no further questions, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for
you. You may do so. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Adams, you can respond also with your writ. You have a right to rebuttal time on your own writ. The speak last. Would you like to reserve any time?
Chief Justice Gibbons, I would like to reserve 3 minutes as well.
Very well. Okay, you may proceed. Mm-hmm.
The case to me is interesting because it involves, on a certain level, a constitutional issue. It also involves cases in many, many state courts that have already addressed the very issue that we're actually talking about here. And what we're really talking about is I'm not sure it's the same question that's asked in the appeal. Does the district court lack subject matter jurisdiction to adjudicate claims involving the interpretation of a statute unless NRED is involved? Really, the question is more appropriate to say, well, does the district court have subject matter jurisdiction to hear claims for members of the class where the named class representative plaintiff has already exhausted administrative remedies. Because when we look at the case law in all of the other states, most of the case law has not been refuted by Southern Highlands. There's a doctrine called the vicarious exhaustion doctrine. And what that doctrine basically says is if you've got an administrative agency that doesn't have jurisdiction or doesn't have the administrative authority or doesn't have the capacity or the manpower to handle class action lawsuits, the only thing that needs to happen is that the named class representative plaintiff needs to go through the administrative process. And if he does that, then the district courts in all of these other states will apply the vicarious exhaustion doctrine and allow the rest of the class members to be class members in the district court if Rule 23 is met. Now, this particular case is interesting again because some of the arguments made by Southern Highlands are exactly the opposite of some of the arguments they made in the underlying arbitration. To convince the arbitrator that NRED had no jurisdiction to hear class action lawsuits, they invoked NRS 38.255. Now, that's the statute that exempts class action lawsuits from arbitration. So they successfully convinced the arbitrator that class actions were excluded from arbitration. Therefore, NRED has no jurisdiction to hear class arbitrations. The position here today in the briefs is that, let's see, NRS 38.255 does not control the debate. Well, unfortunately, it controlled the debate in the arbitration because it led the arbitrator to rule that the class action is excluded. And for a moment after the arbitrator made that ruling, I thought, hey, we're excluded. Class actions are excluded. We can just go to district court. But I thought better of that because I figured their position would change. And they would say NRS 38.255 no longer applies. But that's why they're under the bridge. The arguments are different here before the Supreme Court than they were before the arbitrator. Now, we must also remember, the arbitrator's ruling on class certification was non-binding. It was a non-binding procedure. So it's not binding on any party if that party files a, what we call a trial de novo, I'm not sure if that's the correct term, but within 30 days of the conclusion of the arbitration. Well, if the arbitrator's ruling on class certification is non-binding, why has it then become binding on the district court? This is sort of what I term this sort of circle of death argument, the no man's land argument, where Southern Highlands can argue that, well, NRED has no jurisdiction to hear class action lawsuits. So, when you get to district court, the district court doesn't have jurisdiction to hear class action lawsuits because NRED didn't have jurisdiction to hear class action lawsuits, which means you can never have a class action lawsuit against a homeowners association. There's always the argument that whenever a homeowners association is sued, like construction defect litigation, you can always make some sort of far-fetched argument that something has to do with the CCNRs in some possible way. How can you even sue a homeowners association if they haven't recorded their CCNRs? Because they're not really now a homeowners association. But if you make that argument, well, then any case against a homeowners association somehow involves CCNRs. And I'm not sure that's what NRS 38.310 was meant to do. I think what it was meant to do is to try to keep out of court things like grass growing too high or cars being parked in the wrong place, that sort of thing. Not for fundamental, major issues that affect huge amounts of people. Judge Scan did make sort of a split ruling. She said, well, there are certain statutory-based claims that I don't even need to look at the CCNRs, and I'll get into that a little bit later. She also did say that, well, if it involves the CCNRs, each one of the 1,800 claimants or claims have to go through arbitration. So when we get to the question, if the main class representative plaintiff exhausts administrative remedies, and if the action was actually submitted as a class action, remember the language in NRS 38.310 says the action has to be submitted to mediation or arbitration. Well, it was submitted, and it was submitted as a class action. The statute doesn't say they need to be fully arbitrated or fully concluded or not dismissed, just submitted. The action was submitted as a class action. California courts, I think, had a great quote in the Rose versus City of Haiti case, when it said, plaintiffs in a class action need not exhaust their administrative remedies prior to instituting judicial proceedings, where the administrative remedies available to the plaintiffs do not provide for class relief, the vicarious exhaustion doctrine. What did Southern Highlands argue in the arbitration? That's exactly what they argued. They argued no statutory authority under the ADR program, either explicitly or implicitly, for any class actions to be maintained by any claimant. There's no statutory authority. They also argued, as with non-binding arbitrations through NREB, there's no way to integrate NRCP 23 with the statutorily limited framework of the district court non-binding arbitration program. They were arguing exactly what the California case in Roe seized upon when it said, if the administrative agency doesn't have a capacity, the class members don't have to exhaust administrative remedies. The Arizona case that we cited, Arizona Department of Revenue versus Doherty, same thing, practically the same facts, only it was a tax case. But the main class representative plaintiff exhausted administrative remedies. The Supreme Court in Arizona was funny because that statute had the same 30-day limited period of time before you could file a de novo action. They said under such conditions, one wonders whether a class could ever be assembled outside the realm of theory. I mean, how do you get hundreds or thousands of people to somehow all come together at about the same time, all represented by hundreds of different lawyers, go through an arbitration process where you only have a 30-day window, then for all of those people to then file in district court? It's simply impossible. It would require 50, 100, 200 arbitrations per day. Washington State, the same thing, to require dismissal of all class plaintiffs who had not filed a verified tort claim at least 60 days before commencement of a suit would make it virtually impossible to proceed with a class tort action against the state. It's funny, when you look at the legislative history of NRS 38310, what do you find? Well, there's a fiscal note. They were budgeted $4,300 to buy some computers. And it was estimated there would be about 350 arbitrations a year. This one action alone would require five times that amount. And that's just one action. There's another 10 class actions pending before the district court, waiting for this court to make its determination. So the vicarious exhaustion doctrine makes eminent sense. It has been adopted in court after court after court. Even the United States Supreme Court has noted that exhaustion should not be required in cases where such exhaustion would be futile either as a legal or a practical matter. That's the Hedlund versus Doe case. This court, although it's never addressed this particular issue before, in the case of Engelman versus Westerberg, it recognized, and this court wrote, the doctrine of exhaustion of remedies does not require one to initiate and participate in proceedings where an administrative agency clearly lacks jurisdiction, which is this case, or which are vain and futile, which I would argue is this case as well. And, of course, in the word on class actions, the same thing. For me, it just simply doesn't make any sense when you look at the underlying policy reasons why we have the class actions. You know, class actions are a great vehicle for situations where the amount of controversy is not that big. There's a whole lot of people that have been harmed. And for any one of those people to hire an attorney to litigate a $2,000 claim, first through arbitration and then in the district court, is going to cost tens of thousands of dollars of attorney's fees. That's why the class vehicle is perfect for this kind of thing. That's why, in our opinion, the court should adopt, in the state of Nevada, the vicarious exhaustion doctrine. Now, the interesting constitutional issue that I'm excited about, because I love constitutional issues, is that the whole focus of the appeal is that the district court does not have, quote, subject matter jurisdiction. Why? Because the legislature passed a law saying it doesn't. I mean, that's not really what the statute says. But that's what the, that's what Southern Highlands is basically portraying the statute as. It's a subject matter jurisdiction statute. Well, we all know the United States Supreme Court imbues the legislature with the authority to determine the jurisdiction of the federal district courts. Not so in Nevada, not so in California, not so in many states. In most states, the jurisdiction of the district court is created by the Constitution, and that's how it is here as well. The district court has original jurisdiction over all matters. This is Article 6, Section 6. Over all matters, not given to the justice court, or otherwise given to a family court. So, if the statute is a jurisdictional statute, it's unconstitutional. Violates Article 6, Section 6. But I don't think it is. Courts presume statutes are constitutional. So what conclusion should the court make if it is to presume the statute is constitutional? Well, that's the conclusion I made. It's a procedural hurdle-jumping statute that a plaintiff needs to go through to get into district court. And if it is a procedural statute, then even Southern Highlands cites a case called the Wind Farm case. And this is under the, even under the federal paradigm, not the state paradigm, but the federal paradigm, where Southern Highlands cites New Fund saying the single filing rule, another word for vicarious exhaustion doctrine, which can excuse class members from individually having to exhaust their administrative remedies, has only been found to apply when the exhaustion requirement was not jurisdictional. So if this is a jurisdictional statute, it violates the Nevada Constitution. If it is a procedural statute, the vicarious doctrine, exhaustion doctrine, should apply. The single filing rule should apply.
Would you want to reserve the balance of your time?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Ms. Peterson, I know you have a couple minutes. I have one question, though. This is a general policy. The arbitration statutes probably were designed to control issues like fines over leaving your trash can out too long, your grass is brown, or things like this, to give the homeowners a voice in disputes with the association. Do you think it really contemplated litigation like this?
Mm-hmm. It absolutely did, Your Honor. The statute 38310 is unambiguous that no civil action based upon a claim relating to the interpretation, the application, or the enforcement of any covenants, conditions, and restrictions. So that goes beyond. And the covenants and conditions and restrictions that we're talking about here are in Article 9 of the homeowners of the Declaration. They're talking about the right of the very power of the HOA to issue assessments. So it's absolutely included in that.
Ms. Peterson, if this court were to consider the vicarious exhaustion doctrine, do you make any challenges to the district court's analysis on predominance, typicality, numerosity, all as discussed on pages 17, 18, 19 of the court's order?
Your question goes to two issues, Your Honor, that I'd like to address. And one, my colleague said that, you know, you would never have a class action if you were to adopt our position here. I want to be clear about something. The Nevada Revised Statutes 116-4117 actually allows a class of persons in certain circumstances to bring an action. But that statute itself invokes 38310. In fact, it says that subject to the requirements set forth in NRS 38310, that class of persons may proceed. So this vicarious argument that's being made is simply belied by by the very statutory structure that that we're looking at here. And so with regards to the predominance, typicality, numerosity, we absolutely challenge that. I heard my colleagues say there were over 1,800 claims. We have counted potentially, there haven't been that many foreclosures in Southern Highlands, and you know we're looking at in the realm of 300 or 400. But the point here today is that this is a jurisdictional statute that none of those class members have gone through the program. And had they brought something individually before this court, this court's pronouncements in Ham and in McKnight would have compelled the district court to dismiss it. So you cannot expand that with regards to a class. I see my time is up.
Thank you very much. Something like that. Mr. Adams.
It's my understanding that petitions for extraordinary relief courts manifestly abusing their discretion. And certainly, under the class action review standard, it's also an abuse of discretion. And I think this is important because Judge Scanlon had before her an assessment figure. The assessment figure was derived from the periodic budget. Now, I don't want to go too much into NRS 116, but Subcategory 2 is the super priority portion of that statute. Subcategory 1 is the General Homeowners Association's lien. The case is about subparagraph 2, and subparagraph 2 specifically directs the court, when it's calculating the super priority lien, not to look at the CCNRs, not to look at any other statute. It says you have to look at the periodic budget, the assessment contained in the periodic budget. A periodic budget is not a governing document. A periodic budget has nothing to do with NRS 38310. It is simply a prognostication of what an association's future liabilities are, and it's a way for them to figure out how much we have to charge everybody in assessments. There's no dispute in the underlying litigation that the association can charge assessments. We didn't dispute it in the second amended complaint, which I think is the subject.
But that comes from the declaration. The authority to do that comes from the declaration as opposed to...
And it does. And that's exactly what we did not dispute.
There's some circular.
Well, it's circular, but if... You know, it's been said that the plaintiff is the master of his own complaint. And if we don't complain that their assessments are perfect, that they have every right to charge whatever they want, if they have every right to collect it, and we only dispute, hey, you guys blew a statute. You blew a statute, and the number was contained in a periodic budget, which, by the way, is mandated by another statute. So
we're going to have to go ahead and conclude here, Mr. Adams. Thank you very much.
Well, I'll pose one question.
Justice Hardis, you go ahead.
Could you respond to counsel's argument made a few minutes ago that there's been a statutory replacement of the vicarious exhaustion doctrine in this context,
NRS 116.4117.
Yeah.
That statute permits a class of persons, and as a matter of fact, I have... Subject to the requirements set forth in subsection 2, any class of persons suffering actual damages may bring a civil action. Civil action is defined in Nevada Rules of Civil Procedure, I think it's 1 and 2, as an action in a district court. So my reading of this statute allows class actions to occur, civil actions, in a district court. So that would be my response, Justice.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, I would thank you all for your excellent arguments and briefs, and the case will stand.